Of kings possessing great military power. Patibi ki. By such kings or government. Asurahai. Actually demons. Because they do not need such military power. But create it unnecessarily. Ripalanchanahai. Who were actually unfit to be kings. Although they have somehow taken possession of the government. Bhuvaha. On the surface of the earth. Akramyamanaya. Aiming at attacking one another. Abharaya. Paving the way for diminishing. The number of demons on the surface of the earth. Krita Udyamaha. Enthusiastic. They spend all the revenue of the state to increase military power. So translation, although the demons who take possession of the government are dressed like men of government, they do not know the duty of the government. Consequently, by the arrangement of God, such demons who possess great military strength fight with one another, and thus the great burden of demons on the surface of the earth is reduced. The demons increase their military power by the will of the Supreme, so their numbers will be diminished and the devotees will have a chance to advance in Krishna consciousness. So you can repeat. Although the demons who take possession of the government are dressed like men of government, they do not know the duty of the government. Consequently, by the arrangement of God, such demons who possess great military strength fight with one another. And thus the great burden of demons on the surface of the earth is reduced. The demons increase their military power by the will of the Supreme, so that their numbers will be diminished and the devotees will have a chance to advance in Krishna consciousness. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As stated in Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 8. Ritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam. The sadhus, the devotees of the Lord, are always eager to advance the cause of Krishna consciousness so that the conditioned souls may be released from the bondage of birth and death. But the asuras, the demons, impede the advancement of the Krishna consciousness movement, and therefore Krishna arranges occasional fights between different asuras who are very much interested in increasing their military power. The duty of the government or king is not to increase military power unnecessarily. The real duty of the government is to see that the people of the state advance in Krishna consciousness. For this purpose, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 13, Chaturvarnyamaya Srishtam Gunakarma Vibhaga Sakha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. There should be an ideal class of men who are bona fide brahmanas, and they should be given all protection. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Yathaya Chan. Krishna is very fond of brahmanas and cows. The brahmanas promulgate the cause of advancement in Krishna consciousness, and the cows give enough milk to maintain the body in the mode of goodness. The Kshatriyas and the government should be advised by the Brahmanas. Next, the Vaishyas should produce enough foodstuffs, and the Shudras, who cannot do anything beneficial on their own, should serve the three higher classes, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. This is the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that the conditioned souls will be released from the material condition and return home back to Godhead. This is the purpose of Krishna's descent on the surface of the earth. Puritjanaya sadanam vinashaya cha dushkritam. Everyone must understand Krishna's activities, janma karma cha me divyam. If one understands the purpose of Krishna's coming to this earth and performing his activities, one is immediately liberated. This liberation is the purpose of the creation and Krishna's descent upon the surface of the earth. The demons are very much interested in advancing a plan by which people will labor hard like cats, dogs, and hogs. But Krishna's devotees want to teach Krishna consciousness so that people will be satisfied with plain living and Krishna conscious advancement. Although demons have created many plans for industry and hard labor so that the people will work day and night like animals, this is not the purpose of civilization. Such endeavors are jagato hitaha. That is, they are meant for the misfortune of the people in general. Shayaya. Such activities lead to annihilation. One who understands the purpose of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, should seriously understand the importance of the Krishna consciousness movement and seriously take part in it. One should not endeavor for ugra karma or unnecessary work for sense gratification. Nunam pramata kurte vikarma yari indriya pritya aparinoti. It's from the Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 5th chapter, text 4, Lord Vrishabhadeva's instructions. Simply, for sense gratification, people make plans for material happiness. Maya sukaya varam udvato vimudam. That's from the Bhagavatam, 7th chapter, 9th chapter, 7th canto, sorry. 9th chapter, text 43. They do this because they are all vimudhas, rascals. For flickering happiness, people waste their human energy. Not understanding the importance of the Krishna consciousness movement, but instead accusing the simple devotees of brainwashing. Demons may falsely accuse the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, but Krishna will arrange a fight between the demons in which all their military power will be engaged and both parties of demons will be annihilated. Akshahini nam pati bir asuran ripa lanchanai bhuva akram yamanaya avaraya kruto yamaha. Om gana timiranda sha gananjana shvakaya chakshuna mimitam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. Of course, these verses in the last part of the last chapter of this particular canto, the ninth canto, are leading up to the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so they're in reference to Krishna's mission on earth over 5,000 years ago. And as we read in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning of the 10th canto in Prabhupada's Krishna book, that the earth was actually overburdened, the earth being a devotee, the earth is Bhumi, the earth was overburdened with these demons. So Krishna had a plan to eliminate all these demons, and this plan, of course, was the battle of Kurukshetra. And in order to accomplish that, he actually had to send some devotees or some demigods down who acted like demons, which is really interesting, just to ignite the conflagration, ignite the battle. So, and of course, it's described in the Mahabharata that Duryodhana and Shakuni, they were Kali and Dwarpa, that is, sometimes they're considered, in the Srimad Mahabharata, they're considered to be the worst of the demigods. In other words, is the personification of Kali and the personification of Dwarpa Yuga. And they actually take place in many different pastimes in the Mahabharata, such as in the story of Nala and Damayanti, where they became dice, which is an interesting story, but I'm not going to tell that story right now. So they were sent down to sort of like stir up this whole battle between the demons and the devotees, and actually annihilate the demons, more or less annihilate the demons so the earth was safe for devotional activities. So it seems like we're seeing a similar circumstance right now. And of course, Prabhupada, at a particular point in the past, he predicted that there'd be a big world war. Now, when it happens, we'll have to see. But Prabhupada said, the first war will be between the demons and the demons, and then the demons may attack the devotees or will attack the devotees after that particular point. So what we want to do ultimately, because right now we're not ready to do that, is establish a Krishna-conscious society. A Krishna-conscious society is based on the principles, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the verse and purport, of Varnashram Dharma. Of course, Varnashram by itself without Krishna consciousness is useless. Just to have Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras are not devotees of the Supreme Personality of God, it was useless. I mean, even you find someone who is a demon, like Jarasandha, he was observing some Varnashram principles. For example, when Krishna and Arjuna and Bhimsen wanted to approach Jarasandha, they approached him in the guise of Brahmanas. And Jarasandha, even though he was a demon, actually previously he was Viprachitti, in the 8th canto that's described, even though he was a demon, he received them nicely because they were in the guise of Brahmanas. And even when he discovered that they were actually Kshatriyas or Krishna and Arjuna and Bhimsen, he treated them according to Varnashram principles. In other words, when they were fighting, Bhimsen was fighting with him, every night they would actually, I listened to a class and Prabhupada said, they would sit down and meet with each other just like friends at the dinner table, I guess, and drink liquor or whatever else the Kshatriyas did at that particular juncture. So there was a kind of understanding of Varnashram, even with the demons like Jarasandha. And and you find this description there, not only in the Mahabharata, but also in the Bhagavatam, how the demons would generally respect the Brahmanas. I mean, even you had Ravana, because that's the Ramayana, who had advisors who were Brahmanas. Ravana actually had a father who was a Brahman, of course a mother who was a demon. He was a crossbreed between the demons and the devotees of the demons and the Brahmins. So, but that's not really what we're looking for, like simply to put people in their positions according to their psychophysical nature. The whole point is some siddhir hari toshanam, as described in the Bhagavatam, that the whole point is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, have the Varnashram based on bringing people to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's all useless. Just to put people in different societies or different places in society without Krishna consciousness is shrama eva hi kevalam, as described in the Bhagavatam. Not padyed yadi ratim shrama eva kevalam. And which means it's simply a waste of time. And it also can be demoniac. So you have asura of varnashram, and you have sura varnashram, or devotee, godly varnashram. So godly varnashram means that, as Prahlad Maharaj states, that brahmachari, the first thing is, for the higher classes, brahmachari gurukule vasantanta garohitam, that the children, they go to the ashram of the spiritual master, that is the school, devotional school, vasantanta garohitam archayan dasavan nityo. They learn to work for the benefit of their spiritual master. Brahmachari, Gurukule, Vasundanta. They learn how to control their senses. Goror Hitam. They have good behavior. Achyan Dasavan, they learn that they're a servant. And good behavior in other ways. And this is the essential aspect of the training of the children in Varnashram culture. So therefore, when the children grow up, they'll actually be Krishna-conscious persons, be able to guide society properly. So it's interesting. I was listening to a class the other day where Prabhupada was saying that for the Brahmins, for the Brahmin Varna, because you have Varna and Ashram, the Brahmanas, they have four different ashrams. That's Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. And for the Kshatriyas, Prabhupada said, they only have three different ashrams. That is Brahmachari, Grihastha, and Vanaprastha. And then for the Vaishyas, they have two. That's Brahmachari and Grihastha. And for the Shudra, they only have one, Grihastha. So in other words, according to one's situation in the Varnashram or the Varna, in the Varnas, one has, depending on how many, where one is in the Varnas, one has particular ashrams that one would follow. So anyway, so the first thing Prabhupada mentions here is the Brahmanas, the Brahminical society, the Brahmanas are trained up properly, and Brahmana means one who knows Brahman, and then the Kshatriyas, they're working under the direction of the Brahmanas, and the Vaishyas are working under the direction of the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas, and then you have the Shudras, who Prabhupada said, it's an interesting statement Prabhupada makes here in a verse about the Shudras. I want to read that statement because it's quite interesting. The Shudras who cannot do anything beneficial on their own, that's an interesting statement, should serve the higher class, three higher classes of the Brahman, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. In other words, the Shudras by themselves would actually become very, very degraded. So they need the guidance of the three higher classes. So another point is, I wanted to refer to the Bhagavad Gita, because here we're talking about demons. And demons are not simply an hereditary class or hereditary caste. Demons are those who have certain qualities. And those qualities we need to understand, not only insofar as understanding who is a demon and who is not a demon, but also insofar as understanding our own devotional service, the qualities that we have to conquer or overcome if we're going to be Krishna conscious. And so I'm going to refer to the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is obviously the chapter we'd refer to because that's the chapter that's entitled The Divine and Demoniac Natures. And I'm going to read some of the verses here. And as I said, that when we hear about these qualities, we should not simply think, oh, those people are demons or these people are demons, but actually apply these particular points in regard to ourselves and be introspective enough to try to understand or see or and humble enough to try to see if we have these demoniac qualities. And this gives us a challenge in becoming Krishna conscious. So we'll start with the fourth text in the 16th chapter. And I'll read the Sanskrit. Dambo darbo vivanas cha krodha paryusham eva cha ajnanam chabijatasya partasam paramasarim. The pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance, these qualities belong to those of a demoniac nature, O son of Prita. So, in other words, look within ourselves. You know, if we're prideful, of course, there's many things we can be prideful of, according to Queen Kunti. Janmaishwarya Shrutasya Shibiredamana Abhapuman. We can be prideful of our learning, we can be prideful of our money, we can be prideful of our birth, we can be prideful of some bodily beauty that we have, which is actually transitory. Or we can be prideful of our position in society, we can be prideful of our position in the Krishna consciousness movement. And that pride manifests by looking down upon others. considering yourself better than others. So a Vaishnava, a real Vaishnava, doesn't consider himself or herself better than others. A real Vaishnava considers themselves a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord, who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan, Gopi Bharata Padakamala, Dasa, Dasa, Anandasa. That means a servant of everybody. And of course, that may mean with certain people we serve by giving them instructions, other people we serve by actually listening to what they have to say, depending upon their status in devotional service. So if we find this anartha, this quality of pride arising in our hearts, you know, where we think, you know, we're better than someone else, then we have to deal with it. Of course, how do you deal with pride? Very simply, by serving other people. You can't just say, I'm proud, I got to get rid of the pride. You have to do something practical, do some practical service. Like Prabhupada said, and we were talking about this yesterday, that action and knowledge yields realization. So in other words, to get vijnana or realization, you have to act on jnana or knowledge. And that means, you know, as we said yesterday, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, mudra vegam, pashta vegam, tolerating different pushings that we may have. Because obviously, when we are prideful, there's going to be a pushing of, later on, the second word here is arrogance. Arrogance is the same thing as pride, basically. I'm arrogant. Arrogant means he's prideful, basically. It's the manifestation of pride. So we have to be able to identify that and then tolerate it and not manifest it. You know, so many times we have, and conceit is actually the same thing, basically. Someone is conceited. You understand? Someone's conceited, that means it's prideful. And that manifests as anger. So first there's the pride, the arrogance, conceit, and that manifests anger and harshness in dealing with others. And ultimately, one manifests ignorance, according to this particular verse in the Bhagavad Gita. And so, therefore, somehow or other, we have to tolerate these pushings that occur. So, anyway, then we'll go on to the next verse about the demons. So another point about demons, and we should also apply this to ourselves. Those who are demoniac, maybe I should read the Sanskrit. Pravatim cha, nipratim cha, janana vidurasara. Nasocham napi chacharo, nasacham teshu vijate. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness, nor proper behavior, nor truth is found in them. So in other words, and later on, as Krishna says in this chapter, that one should understand what is to be done, what is not to be done, by Shastra. And also by understanding what the spiritual master, the guru, would want one to do. Cleanliness. Like Prabhupada, he mentioned that the temples should be revolutionary clean, which is very, very important. I mean, just like that means not only the floor and everything like that in the temple. Of course, cleaning the temple is actually cleaning the deity. Like Prabhupada said, if you clean the temple, which is a manifestation of Balaram, it's like deity service. There's not different from the deity service. So neither cleanliness, nor proper behavior, nor truth is found in them. So these are all demoniac qualities. And another one, they say that this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Actually, this is a big one. Of course, this refers indirectly to the theory, and that is a theory, of evolution. And I've been having some discussions lately with one of the devotees who was in the university about how can you prove to the demoniac people, or how can you prove to society in general, that God exists? And one way, there's many different proofs, of course, that you can give for the existence of God. But one proof, of course, is natural phenomena, and particularly biological phenomena. That is, the complexity of life, even the complexity of one cell. For example, one cell is more complex, one cell in our body is more complex than the whole city of New York, or probably all the cities in the world combined. So, of course, the demons say that this happened just by chance. You know, this is a common propaganda nowadays. And they have so many different statements they utilize to try to prove this point. One proof, one thing they had, that which I addressed, was they said, we have so much genetic material in our body, and they said most of it is what they call junk DNA. You ever heard that statement before? Junk DNA means it's not used for anything. And then I countered that by modern research showing that most of the, what the scientists used to call junk DNA, which means it has no use, it just happened by chance, actually has some use. The scientists are discovering that right now. So there's counters to all this thing, all these different points the demons are making, and actually even utilizing scientific knowledge such as has been presented by my godbrother Sataprutta Prabhu, which he dealt with mathematical information theory, one can show that it is impossible for life to exist simply had it occurred by chance. There has to be some sort of design. And of course that theory is called intelligent design. So this is a big conflict right now between the demons and the devotees. And the demons are saying, no, it happened. Everything happened by chance. And the devotees are saying that there's a cause, an intelligent cause behind everything. And the demons are saying everything is simply by the laws of probability. So it's it's ridiculous to say that something so complex, even as one cell, but to speak of a whole human body, but to speak of the aspects of the human body happen by chance. That's a ridiculous argument. You do not see even a simple machine in this world. They cannot give an example even of a simple machine, what to speak of complex life, that occurred by chance. Nothing. Not even like an axe or a tool or a hammer or a nail. Not even one of those things happened by chance. But something extremely, infinitely more complex happened by chance. So this is demoniac understanding. And then Prabhupada, in the next verse here, following such conclusions, the demoniac were lost to themselves and of no intelligence engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Of course, Prabhupada makes reference to the atomic bomb, the atomic weapons, and of course, now they have much more, potent or dangerous weapons, even the atomic weapon. Just to basically establish their supremacy over other demons. And as Prabhupada said, eventually these weapons will be used. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. Sounds like all the world leaders today. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. And the demoniac person, of course, this verse everybody knows, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifice. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In such a way, in this way, such a person is deluded by ignorance. Let's see. And then Krishna, of course, here, later on in the chapter, describes that these personalities are put into lower and lower species of life, the material existence. Such persons, Krishna says, can never approach him. And then Krishna says, there's three gates leading to this hell of demoniac life, and these are the gates that we have to be particularly careful of, and that's lust, anger, and greed. And ultimately, Krishna says, the man who has escaped these three gates of hell, Sin of Kunti, performs acts conducive to self-realization and thus gradually attains the supreme destination. And ultimately, Krishna says, one who has to understand what is duty and what is not duty by Shastra. In other words, Yashastra Vidamitsrija Varte Kamakarita. One who does not act according to Shastra, na param gatim, na shukam, na param gatim, he does not achieve happiness nor the supreme destination. So, anyway, so we should act as divine people or devotees rather than demons, and we should introspectively examine our own hearts to see which of these qualities, divine or demoniac, are manifest. So, any questions or comments? Yes.
I've noticed back in the I remember who I was, that's why I remember what generation I was. Back in the 90s, I remember that I was a little frustrated with some people that have positions, and I realized that they are no more better than I am. They are better off physically. They have better material things than I have. They were better off than me, but they were not better than me because we're all in the same position.
That's humility. That's good, yeah. As they say, but for the grace of God, there go I. In other words, we should understand, we should not think that we're better than people. We should, if we're going to find fault, we should find fault in ourselves. And of course, we should objectively see when people are acting demoniacally too. But we shouldn't think, I'm better than them. I mean, Krishna consciousness is superior, but that doesn't mean that we should think that we're superior.
Because by thinking so,
that's where the pride comes in. And then, if we're not prideless, then it's hard to concentrate on Krishna's holy names. Lord Chaitanya says, Trinadapi sunichena turari vasahishnana. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If we want to be absorbed in Krishna's names, we have to cultivate this abject humility. So, any other questions? Yes.
I know 5,000 years ago, that's when the battlefield of Kurukshetra has happened in India. Mm-hmm. And that was done because of all the demonic level of consciousness was aware of this back then. That was at the beginning of Kali Yuga.
And it was end of the previous Yuga.
Yeah, the end of the
previous Yuga. The beginning of Kali Yuga is when Krishna left the planet.
But now that we're 5,000 years ahead, every second, every day it gets worse and worse, and the age of Kali gets worse until the end.
Yeah.
Nothing's here, it's so bad. But 5,000 years we have the present, and what was happening back then, it's like, it seems like it's happening again right now.
But actually, Kali Yuga, one thing is, there's a great hope, is that in the previous Yuga, Prabhupada describes the demons and the devotees, they were easily distinguishable, who was a devotee, who was a demon. I mean, obviously, Jarasandha was a demon, and obviously, Arjuna was a devotee. But Prabhupada describes in the Kali Yuga, the demons and the devotees are in the same body. That doesn't mean we have two souls in the same body. What that means is that we have demoniac propensities, even though, we may be members of the Krishna Conscious Movement, we may be devotees, dressed up as devotees and everything like that. So these propensities are there in all of us in the Kali Yuga, and we have to be able to identify, and that was the point I was making. And conquer them by, first of all, intelligence and the chanting of the Lord's holy names, be able to ascertain, be introspective enough to see that, you know, I'm exhibiting these demonic qualities. I'm being harsh. I'm being arrogant. I'm prideful. I'm conceited. You know, I think I'm better than others. Or you know, I'm greedy, lust, anger, greed. You know, so we have to be able to look within ourselves. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you know, I see the mote in your eye because I have a log in my eye. Or as they say, you know, you point your finger at one person, 9 fingers or 10 fingers point back at you. So I think the first thing we should do with these descriptions of demoniac qualities is actually apply them to ourselves and think, you know, where am I exhibiting these qualities? Or how am I exhibiting these qualities? And, it, you know, it's a fact that I could say, you know, myself, I could see these qualities within my heart. And that makes me more enthusiastic to chant Hare Krishna, not depressed. I mean, sometimes people will say, well, I'm materialistic rascal full of lust, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, please take this sinner weeping and weeping to your lotus feet. In other words, it should be an impetus for us to fully give ourselves to Krishna when we see these qualities. We have to be honest. One thing that's really important is like self-honesty, introspective and self-honesty. You know, this is not just like we can point out those demons in the street, you know, those demons who are trying to stop Sankirtan, those demons, you know, someone pulls me off, the police pull me over for a speeding ticket, oh, that demon. You know, frankly speaking, you know, we see people who impede our sense gratification as demons, right? So we should apply these descriptions to ourselves. That was the main point I was making.
Yeah, I noticed when you can see fault in others, maybe you see it in your own self before you're able to see it in someone else, because all you have to do is look into a mirror and you can see yourself, you know, faults you see in other people.